Well, welcome to the next episode of the South Australian Playwrights Theatre podcast. And today I'm absolutely honoured to have in my presence the great Stephen Tongan. How are you?
Dum-da-da-da. I'm very good, Matt. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've had a long associated with Steve Tongan.
Yes, firstly,
Frank Forbes and the Yahoo Boy.
That's right.
Starred on stage.
Great play you wrote.
And a great play you starred in, Stephen. And Stephen has been working around the traps of Adelaide in his capacity as MC,
yes,
motivator.
Yes.
What else, Steve? What else do you do?
Advocacy, humanitarian
work, yes.
Amongst a whole bunch of other roles.
Excellent.
All in a day's work, though, my friend.
You're a little bit like a superhero, aren't you? Sort of.
Well, I wouldn't really describe myself as a superhero yet. You know, I don't wear capes or anything like that, but you know, I do what I can.
It's only because you'd get arrested if you were wearing a cape. I mean, it's sort of lawyer by day, actor by night, and also MC,
yeah,
on special nights.
It can be a very boring world out there, man. I'm just trying to do what I can.
To brighten people's lives. And,
yes, yeah, indeed.
So what we're going to do in this podcast is we're going to do a reading of a monologue called Hooray for Nollywood.
Yes.
Now, this monologue, it will be performed by Stephen at Theatre for the Time Poor at this year's Adelaide Fringe Festival. So, Steve, can you tell me a little bit about the character?
Well, the character Ishaku is a very, very interesting guy. He's a very charismatic guy. Like many aspiring, I guess, artists, he's a guy who basically has a dream of becoming a famous director. He writes his own plays. However, he doesn't know how to finance it. So Ishaku is a guy who finds himself with all these great ideas in his head. However, he's in a situation where now he has to pitch his ideas to try and get investors to his story.
And he works in the Nigerian film industry.
That's right. He works in Nollywood. Nollywood being one of the biggest film industries in the world.
Absolutely.
Based in Nigeria, or yeah. Niger, as many would call it. But certainly an interesting character. I've grown to love Ishaku.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. Yes, it's an amazing film industry too, of which I've had some experience working in the Ghanaian film industry, which
yes,
is
indeed.
Like Ghana is to Nigeria as New Zealand is to Australia.
Very
so
true.
If you're Ghanaian and you're successful, you become Nigerian. It's like if you're a Kiwi and you're successful, you become Australian.
Come on.
Yeah, it's like this absorption of small places.
Akwaba to my Ghanaians out there.
Akwaba. Absolutely. Yepa. Okay, well, we'll continue now. And this is Ishaku, who is trying to get investors for his movie projects.
Ladies and gentlemen of the movie industry, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Ishaku Magaji, writer, director, and producer of the hit feature film Victims of Greed, the epic tale of a small village boy who makes it good in Lagos, only to be struck down by the enemies he made during a life of crime. Sorry, I gave away the ending. But that does not matter, because now you have a chance to invest in the next Nollywood hit, Victims of Greed 2. Hey, let me tell you the story. A man moves from his village to the big city of Lagos in search of fame and fortune, but all he finds is temptation. Being a man of great weakness, he succumbs immediately and indulges in many, many acts of unspeakable depravity. Eventually, he contracts AIDS and becomes an outcast of society. He turns to the Holy Quran for guidance, which teaches him God is merciful, and whatever sins you have committed can be forgiven if only you ask Allah sincerely and with an open heart. Anyone can be forgiven. So, I'm sure the question on your mind is, why should I invest in this movie, Victim of Greed 2? You may even be asking yourselves, whatever happened to Victims of Greed 1? Was it a hit or was it a flop? Well, to be honest, it was rubbish. There are two reasons for this. I had no money and the scriptwriter was an idiot. So, I sacked the scriptwriter and bought myself this book. It is called Save the Cat, the last book on screenwriting you will ever need by Blake Schneider, a very wise American screenwriter. It is all about whether the man saves the cat or leaves the cat to die. If he saves the cat, then he can be a very, very bad man and still be forgiven. If he leaves the car to die, then no amount of prayer will ever save him. My former scriptwriter would probably not bother to save any cats, being drunk most of the time. But I have always been good to cats, which is why you need to invest in my movie. I want only some 100,000 naira or so. The dividends will be very substantial. Of course, you do not have to make up your minds now. But please, do not hesitate for too long. There are other investors waiting on the opportunity. You see, my phone is running hot, though. Connections have been unreliable lately. Okay. I see that you're not convinced. But do not worry. I have many more film projects in my sleeve. Oh, I should say up my sleeve. How about this one? The Prodigal Son, a revenge thriller by Shaku Magaji. Jonathan leaves his loving father for a life of partying in London. All the while, his father continues to build his business empire in Lagos, hoping that one day his son will return to claim his inheritance. In the meantime, his brother Jarman works very hard, day and night, in the hope that one day his father will notice his efforts and love him as much. But his efforts are wasted. The father, whose name is Frank, remains obsessed with his firstborn son, even though the boy shows no interest in being serious. So, one day, while Jonathan is in a nightclub in Soho, he meets a beautiful girl. He is overjoyed when she invites him back to her place. But once he gets there, he finds a gang of Jamaicans who have taken time from selling ganja to rob unsuspecting Nigerians far away from home. They fleece Jonathan of all his money, right down to his underpants. They beat him and leave him for dead on the side of the road. No? Not doing it for you? Okay. Well, how about this one? From riches to rags, I'll go straight to the halfway point. Let's forget the first act. Scene 7. Interior bedroom. It is a luxurious place. The sheets are satin. The wallpaper a bright shade of blue. Sound effects of birds singing without a care in the world. Samuel enters with Gloria. Both of them are wearing silk kimonos. On the side of the table is a bottle of Dom Pérignon. Samuel strides casually over and picks the bottle from the ice bucket. Before he unscrews the lid, he looks over to Gloria and smiles. The smile of a man who knows that he has made it and there is nothing that can take his wealth away. It is a smile that belies the fragility of man, the immense pride on which we base our daily lives. Samuel. Baby, life does not get better than this. I think you should drink this bottle, then make love like wild beasts. Gloria.
But what about your wife?
Samuel. She's a long, long way away. And besides, what she does not know won't hurt her. Gloria.
You're a bad, bad boy.
At first, Samuel smiles at this, but then he frowns. Voiceover. Is it really true? Can I really get away with this? Will not Almighty God punish me for all my multiple indiscretions? What? Still not good enough for you? All right, fine. Go away. I don't care. I'm going to take Nollywood to Hollywood and get the real money. None of this useless naira. I'm going to get some US dollars. That's right. Gonna be skiing with Bruce Willis and high-fiving Bobby De Niro. Oh, Robert De Niro. Trouble is, the only African stories they want to hear is small boys either starving or getting shot. We are either the terrorist, the sidekick, or the victim. But that's okay. I can work with that. I can write those characters. Oh, Mr. Bruce Willis. You really gonna shoot the shit out of Boko Haram and rescue Jane, the innocent, white, beautiful UNICEF doctor? Oh, praise the Lord. Can I help you getting my ass shot down as I throw myself in front of you? Why, thank you, sir. Yeah, that's some good narrative shit there. Hollywood, here I come.
Okay, wow, thank you very much, Steve.
That was about vibrations. Man is a busy
guy.
Yes,
and you might be hearing superfluous noises around. We're at Katie O'Reilly's Arts Hub.
Yes, we are.
Yes.
Beautiful place.
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing. There's all sorts of things going on here. Yes, there's like rehearsals in the other room.
Yep.
There's someone painting a mural behind us. Just don't tell Neil. Okay. But never mind. So, Stephen, a very interesting character.
I love this character.
Because that depiction of Africans in Western cinema, is that something that you've particularly noticed?
I think, to be fair, it's something that's well known, you know. Normally the black guys don't really get the front line sort of roles, if you like. We're always in the peripheral.
You're not the protagonist.
We're not, exactly.
The helper.
We're the helper, you know. First order comes to mind.
Well, I'm thinking of something like Blood Diamond.
Yes, which
has got Leonardo DiCaprio playing, you know, like the protagonist is a South African.
The white South African.
But he is the one who has the emotional journey.
That's right.
He goes from the sort of mercenary to the good guy. He sees the error of his ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And the good characters, the good African characters, are usually victims.
That's right.
Who need to be rescued.
Always need to be rescued. Always need the white man to come through and rescue us.
Yes, which is predominant. Yeah. However, you know, in Nigerian films, of course, that's not the case.
Mm-mm.
Absolutely. Nor Ghanaian films, nor Ivorian films,
or Kenyan films,
or Burkinabe films, or Kenyan films. And people don't realise, you know, there's a film industry in sub-Saharan Africa.
That's right. A very thriving in this movie industry that's ever-changing and ever-growing. I must say I'm very impressed with a lot of the quality that's coming out now.
Mm.
Initially, it was always, I guess, you know, when you're interested in film, you always look at the fine detail.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing, like, for instance, the microphone sticking out the screen. You know, things like that used to turn me off.
The production values have improved immensely. However, if you look at it from a pure consumerist perspective, these films were consumed.
Oh, they love it.
In fact, for the last 40 or so years.
Yeah, they've been, in fact, even within my family, we're guilty of it. I can remember my mother used to pretty much buy the DVDs on a weekly basis. And I'm not talking, you know, one or two. I'm talking about three or four or five. Because as you know, there's always part one, two, three, four, five.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know,
like a sequel.
You have to continue the momentum, you know.
And I always enjoy how long they were. Often be 2-3 hours. But my theory was is that they're designed to be consumed during a conversation.
I agree.
You can watch them and maintain a conversation.
That's true.
And then go back to the story because it hasn't progressed very far. And the length of the regret for the transgressor was often very, very long, which it is in real life.
It's true. Well, what I like to find is, the thing I like the most also is the fact that we tell our stories, you know. There's a situation where, you know, you find a lot of taboo topics, you know, that aren't really covered, I guess, in Western.
Well, like the juju.
You have horror movies, and then for us, we have the juju, you know. But in essence, that is a typical African thing. You know, these things about ghosts and.
Yep, you had the ghosts.
Spirits coming back to life.
Absolutely.
And haunting those that have, I guess, somehow, you know, cause an injustice.
Yeah, yeah. It's
making amends for life's
mistakes.
That's right.
And also, the economic and social landscape of modern Africa involves a lot of village to city
moving from the
village to the city.
Yep. Big smoke.
Yep, the big smoke idea that as Africa increasingly urbanizes. And morality is very much a big issue and theme, Christian morality.
So it should be.
Islamic morality.
Yeah, very many corrupted people in Africa.
And corruption, there's a multitude of issues and themes that are dealt with in depth.
That's right.
By Nollywood.
Yep.
And Gallywood, as they call the Ghanaian TV industry, again, trying to get on the back of that.
We should get out of this habit of using wood.
Wood, I know, exactly, exactly.
Hollywood, Nollywood, Bollywood.
Become a bit of a cliche.
Why not something steel, you know, something in you.
Well, that's a challenge for you, Steve, to come up with that one.
Pseudo-steel.
And your background is Sudanese.
Yes, South Sudanese. Yes.
And how is, do they have much of a film and TV industry in Juba at all?
We are now having something, I guess now the wheels are in motion. Mm. I can't really say that I've, historically, I guess if I've seen any films that I can recall, to be honest, not really, but we probably have more documentaries about, you know, battles during the Civil War more than any.
Well, we're locally made documentaries.
Yeah. Oh, well, no. And I guess a lot of the footage taken from the actual front lines.
Okay.
However, in terms of movies, there's some emerging storytellers, directors now coming up. In fact, a good friend of mine, Sammy Lukudu, is doing some great things at the moment, writing a lot of good plays and working with a lot of the local actors to, fantastic, I guess, tell our stories, you know. He's touching on issues such as dowry, things that are really inherently South Sudanese.
Did you want reflections upon in your arts and in your drama that we actively reject in Adelaide, particularly in Australia, completely. Yeah. Our cultural cringes, anything we have to say is not worth saying. Not that everyone feels that way, but that seems to be the general trend.
True.
So, which is what we're trying to address, of course.
Exactly.
Playwrights.
Very much so.
To
tell
get
our
people
stories.
Talking. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. In all their forms.
Yes.
In all the complexity of our society. But it's a very important issue. And what I felt that in Southern Saharan, sub-Saharan Africa was that there were many people, many, many people telling those stories in film and television.
I'm looking forward to what comes up next. In fact, I guess I'm really looking forward to hearing more of the younger generation coming up and telling their sort of stories as well. Because I mean, they say there's nothing new under the sun, but I think there's a lot of stories that still haven't been told.
Absolutely.
Or if they have, I guess they're always, you know,
it's a recontextualized.
Yeah, but it's, you know, same one sort of narrative. But it's good to sort of have a different idea being put down, and, you know, and theatre is fantastic.
Absolutely.
It's probably, you know, the most organic way of, you know, enjoying, I guess, live entertainment.
Yes, and that they say, you know, there's only, on your point about stories being told before, they do say there's only one story that's ever been written. A wants B. A wants B. That's it. A wants B. A has trouble getting B. A overcomes trouble getting B. A learns, grows, develops, cries. A gets B. Or A fails to get B.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the story.
Pretty much. And B.
A and B. It's as simple as that.
And we can go to Z. So...
and go all the way to Z.
Just imagine all those stories.
A wants B, but C gets in the way.
C always gets in the way.
Yeah, yeah. D comes along and adds more complication. it's all mathematics. It's very easy.
It's all about the D.
It's all about the D until you get to the Z. Look, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Steve.
Likewise, Matt. Always a pleasure.
On this podcast. Looking forward to seeing you on stage in your short play that you're performing, Hooray for Nollywood, which is called As Part of Theatre for the Time Poor, at this year's Fringe opening Festival on the 6th of March at Tandanya Cafe.
Yes, indeed.
At 7:45 p.m.
So I'm hoping to see you all there. Please tell a friend to tell a friend. Come and enjoy Theatre for the Time Poor.